From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. If you're a fan of the History Channel like I am, on Monday nights in the United States and Tuesday nights in Canada, I don't know why the dates are different. It's a dopey Canadian thing, I guess. You'll see a show called The Pawn Stars. It's probably one of the better shows on the History Channel. If you appreciate history like I do, and you wonder why, how does a pawn shop have anything to do with history, you'll appreciate my next guest, Rick Harrison from The Pawn Stars. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon.
You know, some of the things I've heard about your show, and by the way, I am a big fan, why a show about a pawn shop on the History Channel? Well, obviously, those that ask that question don't watch the show.
That's right. Yeah, I'm a different kind of pawn shop to begin with. I take a lot of antiques in my store. It's one of my main parts of my business. And we talk about antiques and the history behind them.
Well, it's fascinating because not only will and what I enjoy about it is somebody brings in something that you seem to have a pretty good eye for, you'll also bring in the experts and you'll learn about that item because it makes good business sense to learn about it, to be able to sell it and make a profit, or am I wrong?
I'm a bookworm. I read 3 or 4 hours every night. I really believe that you never learn enough.
Now, whether it's your dad or your son or that lovable character named Chumley, we'll get into in a little bit later, I find the show, and, you know, we watch reality TV, and I don't like it when I hear people call your show and your family show reality television. I guess it is, but we're not talking about a bunch of people running around baking cakes or living in a house going through rehab or whatever. We're talking about a family business, something that you've all been in a long time.
It's not your normal reality show. As a matter of fact, a lot of people are calling it Laugh and Learn TV, which I like a lot better. I mean, the one nice thing about my show, you do actually learn something. I try and give a little blue-collar history lesson every time on every show. Like I said, I've always been a huge history buff, and that's more or less how I got the show, is because I know so much about antiques and I know so much about history.
You know, your dad started the business. You've been in it now 28 years?
Actually 29 now.
29 years? Did you ever think that 29 years ago when you got started in this business that you'd one day be on television? I'm sure your business is...
I never really believed that being on television, no.
Your business has quadrupled. How does it, you know, I'm sure it's, hey, any businessman loves PR, loves to get the exposure, but how does it affect your business? I'm sure, you know, I've heard talk of expansion. I'm sure you're busier than ever, more staff. Chumley is a star now. What more can we say?
It's been a little crazy. We really thought it was going to help business, but we had no idea. I don't know about in Canada, but here in the States, we're the number one show on cable now.
Well, you're popular up here. Again, we do, you know, we do things weird. We have Thanksgiving on a different day, too. But you're on actually tonight on the History Channel in Canada, Monday nights in the United States. But I think it's...
But as far as business goes, mm-hmm. I have gone from 17 employees to 42.
Oh, jeez.
I have to have a doorman outside 7 days a week because sometimes there gets up to 200 or 300 people in line.
Wow.
It's absolute insanity. I'm stopped everywhere I go. It's part of it's almost be careful what you wish for.
I was about to say it's the camaraderie. I think that's how you say that, between you and your family, and it's and I'm sure, you know, it's filmed in segments. I don't know. I've never been there to watch you film it, but it's to see the real life, You know, it's like a family running a business, and you're seeing that real life. In fact, you've even got your boy's friend there, who I'm sure he's a great employee, but would he be there if he wasn't your boy's friend?
No, Chumley's a great kid. He more or less showed up at my house when he was like 14 years old, and I started helping him out then, and he's sort of like stuck around.
Yeah. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. He's a great part of the program. If you're just tuning in, Rick Harrison is here. You know his show, The Pawn Stars, on the History Channel, Mondays in the States, Tuesdays in Canada, and of course they run the Gold and Silver Pawn Shop in Las Vegas. What makes it unique, Rick? Is it Las Vegas itself, because you can't find a more unique community than that city?
I think it's a little bit of that, and I'm like one of the last family-run pawn shops in Vegas. Pawn licenses are very expensive in Las Vegas. I found a little loophole in the law back in 88 that gave me the pawn license.
Mm-hmm.
And big corporations have bought up every other pawn shop in Vegas. I mean, well, they have a business model that works for them. You know, someone brings something in, they look it up in their computer, and it tells them what to pay for it. So, but if someone walks in with an 1830 French Ormolu death clock, it's not going to be in their database.
No, I don't imagine.
And me being a bookworm my whole life and me doing this since I was, 16 years old, I know exactly what it is and what they're worth.
Is your dad I'm going to use the term crusty, as what he appears, or is he putting on a little bit for the TV?
Oh, he is a crotchety old man. Remember, he spent 20 years in the Navy, and part of that, he was a drill instructor.
Oh.
Just imagine my childhood. On the weekends, I mean, he used to buy a lot of fixer-up houses and stuff, and we are his little Seaman second recruits or whatever they were. And, literally Saturday morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, he'd walk in the bedroom and say, get up. If you didn't get up, 5 minutes later, he'd walk in, grab you by your ankle, and pull you out of bed.
Well, you know what? You would quadruple your viewership if you had the old man doing Big Hoss and Chumley, getting them to do calisthenics each morning. I would. I tell you what, I would pay to see that. That's for sure. Rick Harrison is here from Pawn Stars. What is the strangest thing besides Chumley that you've ever seen walk into your pawn shop? Like
I've had so much bizarre stuff over the years. I have Olympic medals in my showcase. I have Super Bowl rings. I have a Grey Cup ring.
Oh, do you? Wow.
Yeah. I have 200-year-old Japanese pornography. I have. The list just goes on and on. There's just been so much bizarre stuff over the years. And people always ask me that question, and it really doesn't click in my head because what everyone thinks is really bizarre, I think is completely normal.
You know what? That's a good point. And I'm picking on Chumley a little bit, but if you check out your webpage, which we have a link in the show notes, you'll see that you guys have acquired quite a fan base. And part of that fan base, people are actually sending you guys things. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I get gifts in the mail like every other day. Everything from beef jerky to someone sent me a little miniature pawn shop that they built. I get weird stuff like that in the mail all the time.
Well, that's
and what it's also done is it's all that weird stuff that people have. Now they're just taking it on vacation with them, so I can someone at my shop can take a look at it.
You know, someone asked the question about day-to-day business and your 24 hours. Does the filming interfere with the business? I'm curious how you do that.
Not too often. I mean, what happens is people just walk in, they have something. Generally, we ask them, hey, do you mind being on the show?
Uh-huh.
And since I have big crowds, when those people are in the store and we do a transaction, I do ask, we do limit the amount of people in the store when we're doing that, because sometimes there can be 60 or 70 people in there, and you just can't film like that. I mean, the sound guy goes nuts.
Yeah, I bet. I'll bet. You know, I got to ask you this question. You remember the old Flintstones episodes? I think you and I are about the same age. When Fred would get mad, you'd hear the train whistle blow and the steam come out of his ears, and he'd turn red in the face. Well, I saw you do that on a show, and Chumley and Big Hoss got the balloon. And you tried to get your money back on it, and then the last I saw is that Chumley was floating away in a balloon. Obviously, the balloon landed. What's going on with that balloon?
I actually ended up leasing it back to the guy. It ended up turning out all right for me. I think I'll make money eventually on it.
Well, that was priceless. Boy, I'll tell you.
That's two young guys getting really big heads when they got a TV show.
Well,
they had a long talk with them about that.
I could tell, like I say, I saw the steam coming out of your ears, my friend, and I don't blame you. Rick Harrison's here for another couple of minutes. We're talking about his show, Pawn Stars, second season now?
No, we're actually filming the third season here in the States. The third season's going to start June 7th, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, we're behind a little bit here then. But how many shows a season?
It's sort of crazy. First season was 13, second season was 20-something, and now the third season they're having me film 45.
Oh, well, you're getting more popular, that's a good thing. You know, we're seeing a lot of reality stars, and I hate, to use that term for your guys' show, because you're more of a historic show, I believe, more of a family show, but will we see Rick or the old man on Dancing with the Stars like Kate Gosselin was?
No, I don't think any of us can really dance.
Well, maybe Chumley?
Maybe Chum, I don't know. It's Chum is having the time of his life. He actually got to judge a bikini contest with Robin Leach last week.
Oh, good for him. Good for him. That's all right. You can't go wrong there. Listen, Rick, I really appreciate it. And everyone, go to the History Channel's website. Go to the link on our show notes to learn more about the Pawn Stars. Rick Harrison runs the Gold and Silver Pawn Shop in Las Vegas. Watch them on the History Channel on Mondays in the States, Tuesdays in Canada, because if you don't, I'm going to send Chumley over to your place for dinner every night. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Take care, my friend. Bye-bye. That's Rick Harrison from the Pawn Stars. And again, picking on poor Chumley, but it's a great show. I'm going to watch it tonight because it's one of my favorites. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back here in just a couple of minutes with Blink from Blink on Crime with some high-profile crime updates. Okay, we're back. I'm going to do my best impression here. Bombshell tonight. No, I can't do it. I was going to do a Nancy Grace impression, but I can't do it. I wanted, anyway, Blink from Blink on Crime is here. And I was going to do this bombshell tonight. Jose Baez has left the Anthony case to join up with John Gosselin to redo The Odd Couple. No, I'm not going to do that.
That would totally be a bombshell. You've missed your calling.
Bombshell. You know, I can't bombshell. And then I'd tell you about my twins, but I don't have twins. So, you know, this whole bit is just going right down the drain. Anyway, Blink from Blink on Crime is here. Our sister blog, the blog of all blogs that covers the crime beat. We're going to talk tonight about the Anthony case, Morgan Dana Harrington, and, of course, Haley Cummings. And it's always a pleasure to have you on, ma'am. Welcome.
Well, thank you, friend.
What's going on with Anthony and Jose Baez? Has he left the case to go golfing with Geraldo, or what's going on?
I don't know that Mr. Baez is much of a golfer.
No.
As I don't think Jerry Rivers, a.k.a. Geraldo, is either. but what it appears is he filed a motion for a notice of unavailability. Let me back up a second, because since we have spoken last, we should probably start at the bombshells, if you will. The defense team led by Jose Baez, co-chaired by J. Cheney Mason and Andrea Lyon, filed for Judge Strickland to recuse himself from the case.
Yep.
There was an immediate response on behalf of Judge Strickland, and if you have not read it, it is poetry.
Hmm.
He's missed his calling.
No, Strickland.
I put him a note.
Strickland was friendly with a blogger. What's going on there?
I don't know that I would characterize that as friendly. I would say that as an interested party, which, by the way, as a judge, he was not out of line.
No.
To read coverage on the case or what have you, he's certainly not precluded in any way. It's my understanding that a blogger, a guy by the name of Marinade Dave, had some health issues at one point, and he had called him upon his return and asked him if he was okay, kind of situation. It was very, topical.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything serious. Well, what happened was the defense, the investigator, who is related, a guy by the name of Jeremiah Lyon, who, of course, is related to Andrea Lyon, one of the co-counsel in the case, ended up meeting with him on April 11th and asked him some questions about the exchange, and literally the next day they filed a motion asking him to recuse himself based on, you know, their interaction.
Mm-hmm.
There was no basis for it, but I do think that Judge Strickland did the right thing by way of the case.
I think so, too, and we'll get into what my thoughts on this in a little while. But with all this and more delays, because there's going to be another judge appointed and all this sort of stuff, are we sniffing out a plea bargain in the works here, or am I psychotic?
No, I absolutely believe that, and I've said this since Chaney Mason signed on. I believe if this case is ever going to plea, it's with him.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think that the defense gambled on, and I'm actually preparing a piece for tomorrow, but one of the things that I think they gambled on is that the next in line for rotation for Judge Strickland's appointment, for he was going back to civil casework, because they rotate the judges between criminal and civil within the Orlando system, if you will. And next in line for the rotation was a judge by the name of Alice Blackwell, who has a very similar, kind of decorum and kind of background as Andrea Lyon. And I think they were vying for her in a way that they just thought the natural rotation would take place. But recall that Chief Judge Belvin Perry, who is now taking over the case, literally asked Judge Strickland to stay on when he was supposed to be rotating. And so now you've got, you know, we called it, you know, in my past professional life, we used to call that the end run, going around your boss.
Yeah, yeah.
And that literally is what happened. So I have to think that they were very surprised when Chief Perry himself decided to step in, and he's actually, you know, the chief judge of the entire Ninth Circuit is now involved in this case. His first order of business was to establish a management meeting, which is going to occur this Friday, which also came with a rules posting. Similar to when you go stay at a hotel and you close the door on the back. Rumor has it there is an evacuation plan that was attached. But seriously, I think that this is the worst possible scenario for this defense. I think it's the best possible scenario for a plea.
Boy, if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, then I don't know.
There's just no way. Chaney Mason has a reputation in the area. And one thing I will tell you is, regardless of what you think about criminal defense attorneys, they're fairly good at assessing each other's assets, you know, fallback, what have you. And really, everyone is just going, look, you know, Chaney Mason is an established 40-year defense attorney. This case, largest case in the nation, is occurring in his jurisdiction. He's never really had a bite out of one like this. However, he's just really not going to, you know, sage a 40-year reputation with Jose Baez at the helm. And personally, I think he signed on to this case. I think, as is typically the case, and I can say that from having a fair amount of experience with attorneys in this area, they do no due diligence up front.
No.
I literally think it came down to the first hearing that they had where they were talking about the funding, where they were actually declaring Casey indigent, and where Chaney Mason is saying, look, I thought this was all taken care of in camera, you know, not really establishing the fact that, or even understanding the fact that now they were asking for public funding. You know, it's a whole new ball game. So, I don't think he felt that that would ever come out, and I think it has just been downhill from there. As a matter of fact, Todd Macaluso, who you see me write about extensively, was actually, he's not disbarred, but he has voluntarily, through agreement in a program, as of this Monday, he will not be practicing law.
So the, yeah. Go ahead.
Through harm, that's a quote, to clients that he has wronged. And those issues were being dealt with when he signed on to the Casey Anthony case. He signed a pro hoc vice, kind of like a visitor's pass, if you will, under Jose Baez's bar license. And in the first one, he put in that he had a clear record, that there were no pending issues. Literally by 4:30 in the afternoon, I think it was Kathy Bellick that was running down the street asking him about it. They ended up filing an amended motion, but I was personally contacted by a family that he has wronged that is suing him civilly, who has told me they themselves filed an additional bar complaint against Todd Macaluso that has not seen the light of day because he agreed to withdraw from his law license, really, through this program that he's involved in.
So a delay. Now, Baez, what's he doing?
I'm not sure that it's going to delay it. To be honest with you, I don't. One of two things, in my opinion, is going to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't think Jose Baez wants anything to do with this case anymore. Mm-hmm. I think he has bled it. I think he has significant issues that are going to pend with a Florida bar. You know, I'll go right to the $70,000 contribution by Todd Macaluso to the defense. You cannot, one side of your mouth, say you're indigent and you have an attorney that is funding their own defense with no deal on the back end or a contingency caveat. It's against the law, and it's against the Supreme Court of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And that was said in open court. So there's an invitation for a complete bar review. I'm not saying, my conversations with them is that if he does have an additional complaint, that it is not public because it has not escalated. They will not confirm or deny that. But there's nothing in this for him. He was a third-year new lawyer under that judicial system, and that's how he's perceived. And, this is a case of a lifetime.
Yeah. And you're right. And it reminds me a bit, although Bob Shapiro was more established, obviously, when he started representing O.J., but then was relished to, emptying the ashtrays and filling up the water cups after that. And I think you're right. With Baez, there's nothing really in it for him anymore, and he may have some other issues to deal with. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. When we hear that he has stepped away or has asked for leave, what does that mean?
Well, on paper, he's simply saying, I'm unavailable from, don't quote me, but I want to say it's, June 1st through the 11th or something to that effect. Now, what's interesting about that is in the 20-plus months that he has covered that he's led the Casey Anthony defense, he has been on vacation, and he's never filed this before.
Right.
Part of that, is, in my opinion, is because in the hearing for indigency, he stated publicly that he does not track his billable hours.
Mm-hmm.
That is against the rules.
Yeah.
And if you don't track your billable hours and you have multiple clients, the first thing your clients are going to do is say, well, if you don't track them for that client, how are you tracking them for me?
Yeah.
And how can I know, when you're working on my case or not? So it's that. But it's also the fact that you have Chief Perry now that's heading the helm, and he is a rules guy.
Yeah.
So if you are saying, he wants to say, look, I'm unavailable, because he also doesn't want any surprises, that he doesn't want any discovery that's presented to his team, if he's going to be out or what have you. But every source of mine, which has been right so far for the most part, if not for all, is telling me, this is the start of the withdrawal of Jose Baez, that Cheney Mason will take over this case.
I think you're right. Well, Jose doesn't have to worry. I'm sure he has panel guest spots on Geraldo and Jane Velez Mitchell's shows waiting for him anytime he wants, because they both adore him. unequivocally. Is that how you say that?
I think that's pretty close. Yeah, but I think he actually has his own gig, and I think he's had it for a while.
Does he?
It'll be interesting. I have heard, and I've heard this for some time, that he has a pundit spot in the Spanish-speaking community, or like a Telemundo network. And I had heard that quite some time ago, and when he answered a question by Kathy Bellick outside of the courthouse in Spanish, literally within weeks of when I heard that, it just resonated with me.
There you go.
I just think that, you know, there's no... It's a cut-and-run situation, and unfortunately, my concern is what a precedent does it set for young lawyers or, you know, individuals just passing the bar that think that they can, you know, reach for the brass ring instead of zealously, you know, representing a client.
I think that brass ring is between a bull's nose. But anyway, let's go to Morgan Dana Harrington. What's going on with that case?
Well, Dana, this is such a heart-wrenching case.
I know.
It is. Right. It is, I don't want to say status quo because I do believe that they are progressing in the investigation, but there is so much going on in this community that you're talking about a community that encompasses the author John Grisham, is president of one of the chapters of the private school within the area. Dave Matthews Band owns some land out there. It is literally some of the most gorgeous, gorgeous land and development in the country, I'm sure. And yet you see these pockets of significant drug busts.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like I say, and in this case more than any that I can recollect, it's almost like you need to stay at about 30,000 feet and observe what's going on in the community to see how the course of the investigation is progressing. Because you have to believe with this, you know, 6 months into it and there has not been an arrest, there's other things going on. And as we investigate and as we look at the peripherals, and I think we have a fairly good grasp of kind of the circle. There is, you know, this one's getting arrested for this. It's almost like, you know, the old school of, look, if we can't get him for that, we'll get him for this.
Yeah.
And eventually somebody's going to talk.
I don't know. You're right. All the stories that I've covered here on the show, this one's kind of tugs at your heartstrings. Boy, I'll tell you, we just don't seem to, you're right. Status quo isn't, there's more out there. You want to grab. And what's the old saying? If you throw something against the wall, something will stick. Well,
yeah, it doesn't have to be pretty.
No, it doesn't have to be pretty. Is
no.
Right.
No, and I say that I don't mean to be glib because there is a lot going on, and I mean that sincerely. It is the situation. Actually, today we actually filtered some video to Dan Harrington that we believe is Morgan and her compadres and. I've had it for some time, and we actually run it through some law enforcement protocols over the last 2 days. I obviously didn't post them, but we feel fairly strongly that it's her. Amidst the, you know, the conversation that there is no, in a 15,000 member arena, you cannot tell me that there is no footage of this girl inside anywhere. Somebody or something is not doing something right, if that's the case.
You're right. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. We're talking Casey Anthony, Morgan Dana Harrington, and Haley Cummings. I want to get your thoughts on this. You know, the more coverage...
Dana, I'll tell you.
Oh, jeez. I've never wanted to reach through the television screen more and shake people than I ever have. This case, this kid never had a chance right from the get-go.
She did not, and, you know, you and I have talked about this in the past, and one of the most frustrating elements of this case for me is, and I have some very significant, close resources that have worked this case, that are on the ground, and every one of them comes back the same way, you know, your hair and your hands ripping it out. One of them has worked on literally Trenton Duckett's case, also Haley's case, and also Kaylee Anthony's case, and has imparted to me this is the significantly most frustrating interview and analysis that he has ever worked on. There isn't one person that does not believe that Misty Cummings knows exactly what happened to this baby.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, going through the course of this, there is no incentive for any one of those people to be honest.
Nope.
You know, cutting deals aside, it's my opinion, and I've heard this, that there is no plans for an immunity deal. They're not there yet. So that's kind of what's keeping things at bay, if you will. The last search that they had, and I know people were very anxious thinking that they were going to recover Haley.
Yeah.
It was my understanding from my sources that that was never a consideration. That what they were looking for was a garbage bag which held yellow rope, which they believe was involved with what eventually happened to Haley, and also a missing blanket that was weighted down with a cinder block. Mm-hmm. Right around, I believe it's the St. John's River there dock. And they didn't find anything. They had Misty out there. Rumor has it that they showed her animal bones and told her that they had found Haley's remains. I would find that very, very hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm familiar with some of the officials in this case, and, I mean, you can't entrap somebody into a confession like that.
No.
I mean, I don't see that happening whatsoever. But I want to say, let me rephrase that. I'm heartfully sorry to say, unless they recover this child, I don't see anybody being prosecuted for this anytime soon.
Well, you know, a lightning bolt can flash down and strike me down right now, but I see them playing law enforcement and media like a cheap violin, because they can't tell the truth. They can't.
I've said from the beginning, everybody said, oh, I can't believe this is happening to her, this poor baby. And I said, you know what? I can't believe it took this long in that environment. There was just nothing. As a matter of fact, I just read before we came on air, I just read that there was some type of accident within the Haley Cummings volunteer site in Satsuma, where an unidentified woman left today via ambulance with significant facial trauma and bleeding, and they found an axe. I haven't had any time to verify any of this, but it was reported. I mean, one thing after another, it is just every reporter I have ever talked to, and even on the national side, they were literally, like, calling each other, do you want to cover the Cummings case?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to cover the Cummings case. Because nobody wanted to be down there.
Yeah.
The vibe in that area, it was so horrible.
Oh, I know. I'm not laughing at the case. I'm just laughing. I'm making a mental comparison in my mind, and I think you know where I'm going. But it's so sad that poor little Haley just never had a chance. And when you see the coverage and the bones and the bag and all this sort of stuff, and I can't help but flash back to, oh, I'm going to do my best Archie Bunker here. Leonard Padilla and the search with the guy in the water and with the cross on the tree, and they were going to find her. He was 100% sure of Anthony, and it was just, it was like a bad reality show is what it was.
Oh, well, back to, I think his name was David Bedalia.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. That guy just came up again in the Kaylee Anthony case. Now, there's some things I know about him that I can't say publicly, except I will say he completely misrepresented his credentials and was fired as a result of it immediately after he appeared on the media. So I'm comfortable saying that. But within the letters that Casey Anthony, a.k.a. Muffin, sent to Cookie.
Yeah.
He's referenced in there. Cookie. Apparently, he had some level of involvement with this Robin woman who was corresponding with Casey Anthony in jail, in Orange County Jail, who has now is a convicted felon for drug charges and a federal crime. Apparently, he had some involvement. So how that came full circle or whether or not it was a complete coincidence, I'm not sure. I'm going to be covering some extensive work on the analysis of those letters. I don't think they're as innocent as people think they are. I think Casey has been, you know, those 7 hours a day in Jose Baez's office with her stolen white Target sunglasses has literally imparted some knowledge into this young girl. I don't think she's as stupid as people think she is. And I know that a lot of people have called her lazy and, you know, lackadaisical. She's not that smart. I agree with that. But what she is narcissistic.
Yep.
And narcissists will do the work to get what they want, even if that becomes getting smart.
And exactly. No. And they will manipulate the situation to their benefit the best that they can. And it's sad to see it. Red sends a quick comment about Jose Baez being a pundit on Telemundo. I got to share this with you.
Yeah.
It says, good God, Jose Baez, a pundit on Telemundo? Move over, Eric Estrada. And then it says, does Blink say he was going to be a pundit or the village idiot? Does this mean that we can't get any pictures of Baez staring adoringly in the eyes of the tot mom? If that isn't a bombshell, I don't know what is.
I think they're coming out with a line of red licorice just for him special.
Yeah, those sweethearts, you know, the little things like that, they can have their pictures on both of them. 30 seconds, Blinkster. You tell us what's going on next on Blink on Crime.
Well, we're going to be covering some extensive work. This week is a big week with the Kaylee Anthony case, and I think it's going to be defining. This Friday coming up is going to be the management hearing, and I think there is going to be, you know, the ground rules that are going to be set. Within Morgan Harrington's case, I think we're making steady progress, and I think we're close. I think there's going to be some revelations in that case. Haley's case, God forgive me, I just think unless they recover her body, I think it's going to be a long time before we see anything.
I agree. It's one of the more depressing ones that's out there. Blink from Blink on Crime. Thank you, ma'am.
Be well, Dana.
Talk to you again.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. We take a break, and we're going to come back with NBC legal analyst. Yeah, that's a new title. Former DA from L.A. County, Robin Sachs, with some more on the Casey Anthony case here on the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment with former L.A. Assistant District Attorney, author, television pundit, and now, I love this title, NBC legal analyst Robin Sachs. Hi, Robin.
Hi there. How are you?
Good, good. Will we see a coup where NBC legal analyst Robin Sachs will try and take over the Tonight Show from Jay Leno anytime soon?
You never know. You know, actually, I am behind the whole Conan departure. The fact of the matter is they want me on.
There.
So, you know, they had to move Conan over. Jay is taking over for me, and I'll be starring in it.
There you go.
Of course.
tell us about NBC legal analyst. I don't think we were talking about this last time you were on.
No. It kind of was unofficial, and it did become official about 6 weeks ago, but of course I'm one not to like to jinx things until everything's in writing and everything's done, and I have my NBC ID now and privileges to even get in the parking lot, so it's very exciting. It does not prohibit me from participating in other shows. I don't have an exclusive contract with them, which is fabulous, and love that. But also get to have an amazing network who obviously has an amazing audience, especially with the Today Show.
Yep.
And they really care about crime and covering some of the important stories. So I'm hoping to use that relationship to be a conduit to get some of the cases that don't get known a little bit more attention.
Well, good for you. If there was anyone that deserved it, it's you, because you've worked really hard, not only in your past life as an ADA, but all the work that you've done for victims and those involved in crime that haven't been able to be heard. But someone that we hear about all the time, Robin, is Casey Anthony, and I want to talk a little bit about these jailhouse letters. Are they going to mean a bit of good to anyone in this case, or are they just good fodder for the cable crime shows, something to talk about now?
Well, listen, anything to make news out of non-news is something that Florida is really helpful at in terms of their release of documents. And, you know, there's the one thing that I really do think is that the more you can get a personality. The more that you can bring a person to life, especially a defendant who has a, you know, Fifth Amendment right not to testify and a right to remain silent, so sometimes you don't get the benefit of actually hearing what they have to say. And the only way that you can hear what they have to say is through their own words, either vis-a-vis statements that they have made to other people or journals or their own writings or letters and all and so forth. So will they, you know, mean any, you know, amount to a bunch of beans or not will only depend on what the 12 in the box think of them. And the fact of the matter is that if, you know, the jurors put the craziest weight on the craziest thing, but I think that it's helpful, and particularly from the prosecution point of view, to be able to see, you know, get a little bit into the mindset and understand, you know, kind of the cold, calculated feeling behind Casey Anthony, which is, you know, the one big hurdle. If there is a hurdle in this case, the hurdle is going to be, how can a, you know, an attractive woman do this to her child? And those letters and reactions after the news of the death and all those other kinds of non-material type of things may play well in front of the jury.
You know, I can't help but think with all the delays and the paperwork that the defense for Casey Anthony is, you know, shoving down the court's throat, and now the judge stepping aside, that we're not going to see a plea deal or a plea bargain coming up here in the next little while. Am I out to lunch when I think that?
No, you know, this case does not appear to be a plea type of case. And I mean, the defense has never said anything other than she's innocent, and nothing to suggest that there was anything ever on the table other than, you know, pressure from the potential pressure from the prosecution, which we don't even know if that's even true or not. So, no, I don't see a plea deal. And frankly, the other part of it is why? Why would she plea? You know, this is someone who's narcissistic, who's probably getting more attention than she's gotten in her whole life, mm-hmm. from her family, from lawyers, from media. I mean, she's almost relishing in it, not directly, but perhaps indirectly. And so if you can carry out the madness and stay the focus of attention, and you're a narcissist, this is, you know, this is a win for her.
Yeah, keep the attention flowing, that's for sure. What about the judge stepping down after an alleged conversation with a blogger? I don't particularly think he did anything wrong, but I do think he did the right thing by stepping down. It's just too bad because there's been so much attention on this case.
Well, you know, when there is any sort of appearance of impropriety, whether it rises to the standard that of requiring removal or step down or replacement or so forth, is always something that could rear its ugly head in some appeal at some later point.
Yep.
And when you already have a case that's been continued out this long and has not really had any sort of materially important hearings as of yet, no evidentiary hearings, no time from witnesses or civilians lost yet, you know, nothing that could be undone really at this point. He did the right thing because there's no doubt in my mind that if he had not done that and Casey Anthony were to be convicted, you betcha that would be something that would be a point of appeal. Now, whether it would hold or not, why go through that? Why not take that issue off the table now? So for those reasons, he did the right thing.
Yep, I agree totally. Robin Sachs is here. You can check out her webpage at robinsachs.com. Or listen to her and Stacey Dietrich's fantastic radio show Sunday nights on Blog Talk Radio. It's called Justice Interrupted. And what's going on with Justice Interrupted, Robin?
Well, you know, last weekend we had another great lineup. I know that you'll laugh at this, but we dubbed last week Shero Week, as in hero with a she, and really talked about some amazing women. Two of them, you know,
yes.
Stacey Honowitz, who is a CNN correspondent as well, a guest expert commentator, as well as a new author of the book, My Private Parts Are Private, and a Florida State prosecutor, often appears on Larry King, and so we were able to highlight her achievements. And then we had Susan Murphy Milano talking about her book, And next week, if all goes well, right when you called in, I was just on the phone with the Matrice Richardson family trying to bring back that case. I don't know if you recall, that was the 19-year-old girl who was at Joffrey's restaurant in Malibu, who was arrested for acting erratically or potentially drunk and allegedly not paying a bill or what have you, got released from the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department with no purse, no phone, no nothing, and has been missing ever since. So I'm going to try to put some awareness back on that case. And it's interesting because, as you know, I've been working with the Dubois family, in the, as you know, related to the Chelsea King family, and Mo Dubois met with the family, the Therese Richardson family, today, and they are working on coordinating an effort to do some searching out here in Malibu. So we're going to bring some awareness to that.
Well, bringing attention to those that haven't been able to get it is your specialty, and congratulations on the NBC legal analyst part, and we'll see you next week.
Looking forward to it. Take care.
Take care, Robin. Bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs. You can see her on all the cable news shows and now as a NBC legal analyst. And, of course, one of the co-hosts of Justice Interrupted, doing great work, as always. Joe Ocasio is the father of Tracy Ocasio, and she's been missing for some time. And I sat down with Joe earlier today to get an update on her case. All right, my next guest's daughter, Tracy Ocasio, has been missing since May 26th. 2009, she was last seen at the Florida Tap Room. We've covered this story many times on the show before, but it's always good to cover it again because we want to help those that need the help as far as crime victims. So anyone with information regarding the disappearance of Tracy Ocasio is urged to contact the Ocoee Police Department at 407-905-3160. 407-905-3161 or Crimeline at 1-800-423-TIPS. On the line with me is Joe Ocasio, Tracy's dad. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
It's always tough to, you know, I can think of Drew Kesey, Beth Holloway, many different parents of missing loved ones that I've had on the show over the years, and it's always tough to have you guys on the show because I want you to have answers. Actually, I want you to be able to sit down for dinner with your daughter tonight, but we're not here to talk about that right now. We're here to talk about your daughter's disappearance, and it's coming up to a year, I believe, in May. What's the latest on the case, sir?
Well, we currently have a search going on here Saturday, May 8th, and we recently had a tip in regards to her keys and ID going back in certain areas. When we first were searching for her, obviously we're looking for her, so we did not use metal detectors, so we have a group, part of the Central Florida Search and Rescue, that it specializes in nothing but looking for metal. They work for the police looking for ammunition shells and that type of thing. So they're going to be coming over and helping us look, along with other searchers that we're going to do part of the lake area here in the area of interest and some other areas that we haven't searched to date.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, we go back to, you know, May 26, 2009, but let's talk about May 25, 2009, or the last time you spoke with your daughter.
Well, I mean, we were actually in the heat of the battle in regards to playoff basketball with Orlando Magic here in Florida, and she's a big fan, and so am I. So we were just talking about if the Magic would have won that game and trying to get tickets for the playoffs. So we were just on a high note in regards to that piece there, and I would have never in my life thought that that was the last time that I was going to be able to talk to her.
Losing a loved one. I recently, just a week ago, lost my sister. But to have a daughter, and I'm looking at Tracy's picture here right now, and I encourage listeners to go to the webpage at TracyOcasio.com. There'll be a link in the show notes to learn more about the case. Beautiful young girl, you know, whole life ahead of her. Joe, this has got to be a nightmare for your family.
First of all, Dana, sorry to hear about your sister. I did not know that, so my condolences go to you.
Thank you.
But you're right. I mean, I've lost my father before, and you go through a process of grieving, and at one point or another, you're able to put closure to it. But just not knowing what happened to her, not knowing if she's out there laying in the field, just not knowing if I ever going to be able to see her again, bring her home, and maybe even give her proper rest. It's just surreal, just totally surreal.
Well, it answers, I hate that term closure because, you know, gosh, I lost my dad and my sister within an 11-month period, and you never have closure in a case like this. But I want your family and all these other families to have answers and to have justice. Let's talk about the investigation a little bit. Anything that you can share with the audience?
Well, here's the unique thing about the investigation. When it all started, Hathaway was pulled in for an interview. He pointed the finger to two other folks in the area. Those people were brought in. They were interviewed. They were given lie detector tests. And then the story that he brought forward turned out to be untrue. There was even another policeman that was even part of the quote-unquote being a witness, because this person happened to be at a bar area where there was a policeman at the place. So from there, everything started pointing at Hathaway. And then later on during the investigation, and as time has taken place, other things have come up that really puts a finger back at him. I can't share all the details.
Right.
It's strong enough that in the beginning I thought we should keep our options open and looking the different folks and the different people that were familiar or involved with the case. But at this point, I'm 99% sure that the answers lie with him, or he has knowledge of what's involved with this disappearance of our daughter.
Okay, you're going through some power failure down there, and I'm starting to lose your signal a little bit, Joe, so if you could speak up a little bit. Joe Cassio's here. We're talking about the disappearance of his daughter, Tracy, who's been missing since May 26th, 2009. Go to TracyOcasio.com. As far as the investigation goes, and I know there's some things that you can't share, are you satisfied, I always ask my guests this, with the scope of the investigation? Are the police doing the best that they can?
Yeah, from that angle, I'm satisfied. I guess what I'm not satisfied is that when you get to a position like we are today, where literally it's become a cold case, that we have very few options. So from that standpoint, no, I'm not satisfied. Now, with my involvement with the local police here in Ocoee, I do see them doing everything they can, and I do see the effort. I do see the sense of urgency with things that come in. So I can't complain from that angle. But as a parent, after being almost a year, I mean, you can't be happy with that.
No, of course not. Of course not. There's still a reward involved here.
Yes, we still have a $20,000 reward for any information that can lead to helping us uncover what happened with our case, and that's still active.
You know, one thing, and again, my heart goes out to all families, yours and others, and I can think of speaking with Drew Kessie and others, when you lose a loved one like this, Joe, and the family strength and seems like it doubles wanting to help others. If you had a few words for someone right now who's concerned about a daughter or a son, maybe they haven't seen in a day or two, or they're not really sure what's going on, or they have a missing loved one, and they're just beyond themselves, they don't know how to proceed, what would that advice be?
Well, first of all, and it took me a little bit to get my wits, is to keep calm and really think things through. I think we made some mistakes early on that looking back, if and it is hard. I mean, it's hard for any parent to be calm when your kid is missing. But to look at it objectively, I think we would have made better decisions. For example, when her vehicle was found, we hadn't placed a missing persons report. And not even thinking, we took and brought the car back. I wish we would have done that because we probably lost some evidence that could have been critical. So, you know, if you're not sure if you're missing someone, you know, get with someone else that maybe can give you some help and think things through so that you can make and take steps that could be helpful down the road, and keep the hopes up.
Yeah, you know, the hope is the main thing here, and it just seems like hope always takes so damn long when it comes to cases like this. I want to ask you about the iPod. I can remember last time talking about this case that there was an iPod that was discovered. Any evidentiary value to that, or was it discounted?
No, it was not. Once they went to the lab, it turned out to be not hers. When it was first found, from the pictures that I was shown, it was really hard to see if it had a cover or if it was an actual plain iPod with the colors from the original colors. So I couldn't tell, and it looked like it. But once they took it to the lab, and looked at it and the songs and everything that was in it, you could tell that it was not hers.
Will you be present during the search? Or are you needing help from volunteers, or what can you tell us?
Well, this is a private search group. Actually, it's the same search group that Drew Kesey has used several times and was kind enough to share with me, and we've been using that same group. And these are professionals, either law enforcement, fire department, et cetera, and they do not take volunteers. You have to go through the process of being certified and joining the group in order to do that. However, I will be there on May 8th for most of the day. We'll be coming in and out and offering our support and also reviewing some areas that we would like to have searched. So I've been pretty close with the search team and just setting, not so much setting things up, but in regards to areas to search and areas of interest.
Okay, Joe Cascio, I want to give you the last couple of minutes here. Take over the mic and give a message out there to those folks that are listening, and tell them what you need to tell them as far as what they need to do, because a lot of times, and we've talked about this also, people are afraid to come forward. They don't know what to do. They may not know how to get involved. Give that information to them, how they can get tips across.
You're totally right. I think that there are people out there today that have knowledge of the case, whether directly or indirectly. I've had some that have come forward and they're afraid to talk. And I just plead to the public that if there's anyone out there that have any information, no matter how small, to really take it forward and call the Ocoee Police Department and or the crime line. Because you never know, that sometimes something so small might become something big in a case such as this one. And sometimes people might think that you're putting a burden on the police and or the case, and that's not true. So let us make that decision, and no matter how small, please call it in, because we just need a small break in this case to hopefully be able to find what happened to our daughter.
Absolutely. And again, any information, call Crimeline at 1-800-423-TIPS or go to Tracy Ocasio, that's TracyOcasio.com. We'll have a link in the show notes that you can click to find more information. My heart goes out to your family, sir, and let's hope for some success in this search. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Dana. God bless.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Joe Cascio talking about the disappearance of his daughter, Tracy. Again, there's a $20,000 reward for information leading to an arrest, or just information to where her, what happened to Tracy. That's for sure. You can learn more by going to the webpage at TracyOcasio.com. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And again, make sure and check out that webpage at TracyOcasio.com. I sat down with Dale Archer, Dr. Dale Archer, a psychiatrist, has his own television show, The Dr. Dale Archer Show. He's a Fox News contributor. He's on all the cable shows talking about mandatory minimum sentences for child sex offenders. We've talked about it before, but I thought his article was quite poignant on Fox News, and here's what the good doc had to say. Okay, we're back. You'll know my next guest, Dr. Dale Archer, as a psychiatrist, host of his own wildly popular Dr. Dale Archer Show, and a frequent guest on Fox News and all the other cable channels. You know, when you look at some of these cable news shows, guys like Dr. Dale Archer are the kind of people we want to see, because they come up with ideas like he has written in a recent opinion article on FoxNews.com that there should be mandatory prison sentences for child sex offenders, and in particular, he quotes or talks about the story of Chelsea King, Amber Dubois, and Candace Monseo. I hope I say that right. I always screw that one up. And they were all victims of John Albert Gardner, you know, that nutcase. And it's always nice to have Dr. Archer on the show with me. I've always wanted to say this. What's up, Doc?
How are you, Dana? I'm doing
great. I'm good. I don't have my carrot and my Bugs Bunny impression with me, but I've always wanted to say that when I've had you on the show. Anyway, listen, great article. Foxnews.com will have a link in the show notes for it.
Okay.
We've talked about mandatory minimum sentences before, but you bring up some things in your article, like right now there are I'm quoting from it, a staggering 704,777 registered sex offenders in the United States. I had no idea it was that many, and I knew it was a lot, but some of these things are staggering. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that I researched this article and was pulling up a variety of statistics, and that, when I saw that, I go, no, wait, that can't possibly be right. 700,000? And it turns out you can actually Google that. You can, there are a variety of sites that you can go to and get the current figure. So that figure is updated, I think, once a week. And, unfortunately, it keeps going up. But, you know, the Adam Walsh Child Protection and Safety Act, Adam's Law, was a great first step carrying Megan's Law even further in terms of getting these folks registered. I think the problem now is the system is just overwhelmed with such a large number. And now we've got to start focusing on the individuals who are at high risk for relapse, which, of course, the law breaks it down into three different tiers based on severity and potential relapse. And I think we really need to start focusing on those tier threes.
Yeah, the Garrido case was a prime example of how supervision doesn't really exist. But what you talk about here is, you know, John Albert Gardner and some of the cases involving him. And I still believe there are probably others that we don't know about. But when you look at that and you talk about a psychiatric evaluation on a sex offender, people are going to sit back and say, what is that, ink spots? Or is that, yeah, sit back and ask him what he thinks about little kids or what? It's really not all that complicated, is it?
No, it really isn't. And this case is just so sad because of the fact that this guy, John Albert Gardner, was convicted of assaulting and molesting a 13-year-old. This was back in 2000. He punched her in the face repeatedly in order to beat her up and then started molesting her. And she was lucky to escape, actually. So they got a psychiatrist to evaluate him and determine if he would be at risk for relapse, because, of course, that's what we want to know with these folks. Dr. Matthew Carroll was a psychiatrist, said, yeah, he's very, very high risk. He has no remorse. He is a danger. Give him the maximum 30-year sentence, because otherwise he is going to act again. Due to a variety of plea bargaining by the prosecutor, his desire to spare the 13-year-old child from testifying, they got a 6-year sentence. He served 5 because, of course, sex offenders always get off for good behavior because there's no one to abuse in prison. There are no kids there, no women there.
Right.
And he got out and had 8 parole violations over the course of the time that he was out before, of course, striking with these ones that we know of. But the deal is the psychiatric eval is very, very simple. It's not rocket science. It's basically you are assessing them to see if they feel guilt and remorse, take responsibility for their actions, don't make excuses, and admit what they did was wrong. And if you get that, and that's a pretty good indication you have a chance to perhaps rehab these people, not saying they'll be in prison because they still do, but if you don't get that, it's almost guaranteed that you're going to get a repeat offender.
Dr. Dale Archer is here. You mentioned plea bargains. Our friend Robin Sachs and I have gone head-to-head on this topic many times on the program, where she believes in plea bargains. She says it's an important part of the judicial system. I say that plea bargains cause more problems in certain cases, especially like this one. Your thoughts on the plea bargain system? I know you've pretty much explained it already, but like you say, when a sex offender is in prison, there are no little kids around there for him, no women, and he's going to try real hard to get out so he can get out and do what he likes doing best. Or am I being insensitive here?
No, I think you're absolutely correct, and I don't often disagree with Robin, but I'm going to have to disagree with her on this one, especially in these types of cases, because I think that there's several reasons this ends up being a crime that is plea bargained a lot. And number one, first and foremost, is the fact that prosecutors don't want to traumatize, quote unquote, the children that got molested by making them testify. And I just think that's a very, very short-sighted view. I think that you have to look at society as a whole and understand that if you have one child who has to testify in order to put this individual away for a long, long time, think of all the other children you are potentially saving. So I think it's a mindset. I understand that lawyers often look at this and say, well, we're not sure we have enough for a conviction, so we're just going to take the sure thing. I just don't think that in the big picture that is really doing society a favor. I think that in the short term, perhaps, but in the long term, these cases in particular need to be prosecuted to the mandatory sentence that you can go for. And then if you end up not having enough, then perhaps you have to plea bargain. But I think the mindset has to change on that with the prosecutors.
What about the judges? The judges don't like mandatory minimum sentences because they say it takes their discretion away from them. But in this case, again, the discretion is what's causing the problem.
I agree with you, Dana. And I think that if you look at some of these cases, you will be shocked with the huge spectrum that the judges will mete out sentences, to the point where you have some that are convicted of molesting a child and they're doing 2 years. And then if you get in some very, very hardcore judges' chamber, then you may end up getting 30 years. So I think that in this type of case, where it's such a vast discrepancy and where the risk is so great for relapse, remember that when you look at the general convict population, sex offenders are 400% more likely to relapse than the average convicted felon. So it's out the chart in terms of the risk. So, I know the judges don't like it, but I think that this is just too important to not have something in place to have a sentence that is dictated.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Dr. Archer is a frequent guest on FoxNews.com's The Strategy Room. You can see him on many different cable shows, including his own Dr. Dale Archer show, and, of course, a frequent guest on my program. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you so much, Santa.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Dale Archer with an excellent article on FoxNews.com. Mandatory prison sentences for child sex offenders? You bet. That's what we all want. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Well, I hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can pick up podcasts of past shows and, of course, the daily commentary. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.